This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you wasn't the fun, the judgment. My own sweet down to the T24. I don't recognize you for this anymore. I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated.
Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, as always, Shane Told, and welcome to my podcast, where you can be a fly on the wall as I take you into the backstage conversations from one front man or front woman to another. And yes, it is not Tuesday, as usual. Today is a perfect Friday. I bet you're all a little more calm on your commute, chilling out, about to hit the weekend maybe. But the reason this is going up early is because this is a very special episode celebrating a brand new record by Florida legends Under Oath. That's right. If you've been living under a rock, didn't know they're back, well, they're back with a new album, Erase Me. And let me tell you, it is a stunning record. Spencer Chamberlain is here. We talk in depth about the album, what went into it, and we get to some pretty heavy stuff as well. I don't want to spill the beans. I don't want to spoil it. But I'm very glad you're here. So stick around, because this is a good one. Before we cannonball into that, I do want to thank all of my sinners worldwide. And by sinners, I mean members of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. That's right. If you want to help out the show and get some great perks, including monthly bonus episodes with non-lead singers, Q&A sessions with me every month, access to a great community of other fans. We talk about music, sports, just about everything. And of course, I'm on there all the time. Also, merchandise and patches shipped to your house. Other great stuff. Be sure to check it out. LeadSingerSyndrome.com/allaccess. For as little as $6 a month, that gets you in. It helps me keep the show going and growing. Great guests. Keeps the lights on. Because, you know, for some people, one episode a week, it's just not enough. So check it out. That's all I ask. Again, the link is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. I do have a New Year's resolution update for those of you who join me in solidarity to help each other out with our life goals. Well, it's been 90 days now since the beginning of the year. Feels like way longer than that, but whatever. I'd like to report that with the weight loss, I am down 12 pounds. So pretty good, about a pound a week. So yes, thank you everybody for the support and the love. And I gotta say, I'm feeling pretty good. Heartburn is gone. I'm sleeping better. I'm using the force. You know, it's great. It's really great. And I'm not stopping. I got a little ways to go, but I do want to thank y'all for the support and give you a little update. In other news with me, I'm gearing up for more touring with Silverstein in a couple of weeks. We're heading to Europe for the Empiricon Festival, also an Australian headliner with our very good friends and Canadian brothers in Comeback Kid. Tickets are on sale for those, so check them out. And of course, if you see me, you know, wandering around, be sure to say hi and feel free to chat me up about the show, about the podcast, about anything that you want. I love meeting people on tour. And a reminder, before we get into this, if you are looking for some sweet new merchandise, whether it's a new t-shirt for the spring, a hoodie, a windbreaker, some good Charlotte arm socks, whatever it is, you can bet your ass. Rockabilia.com has it. They have over a million different items, all licensed from the artist. No knockoffs, no cheap imports. This is the real deal. So much rare stuff as well. Stuff you're not going to find on eBay or Amazon. A lot of stuff's fake, by the way. And best of all, we have a promo code you can use, PCJabberJaw, to save 15% off your entire order today. 15%, pretty sick. Again, the promo code is PCJabberJaw. PCJABBERJAW. I know you can spell, but I'm spelling it out anyways. So check it out, rockabilia.com, PCJabberJaw, for all of your merchandise needs. All right, everyone, the time has come. Are y'all ready? Let's jump in to my conversation with Spencer Chamberlain of Under Oath. You got me wrong. How can we end the blindness of loss? I know. Please God, give me a chance. You got me wrong. This is all so damn useless. I'm done with you. I'm done. This is so damn useless. I am here. I am back. With Spencer of Under Oath, my dude, it is so good to have you back. I understand you've been swimming.
Yes, I just went swimming.
The record's done, erase me's done, you're allowed to go swimming, okay?
Yeah, man, sometimes you gotta take a minute and you know, do something for yourself, you
there
know?
You go.
Treat yourself,
Go. Exactly, it's funny, you know, I was going back, I was just kind of listening to snippets of the podcast that we did the first time you were on the show, which was like, I don't know what it was, like episode 10 or something. And
like 2 years ago, right?
It was more than 2 years ago now. It was like two and a half. And at the time, if you can believe this, Under Oath hadn't even gotten back together to practice yet. You guys hadn't physically been in the same room. And here we are now with a new record under your belt and all these tours you've done and everything. It's like, isn't it amazing how much can happen in 2.5 years?
Yeah, it is pretty crazy, man. It's definitely wild. I think about that too, like looking back at my life and some of like maybe the harder times, like, oh man, it was like 3 years of hell, you know, but it's like, man, you can do a lot in 3 years and get a lot of shit done and yeah, work on yourself. And like in this case, it was our band, you know, like these past 2 years since I talked to you, it's been like, I mean, it's been a lot of hard work. Thinking about the last time I talked to you and now I'm like, oh, it's not that long ago. But then when I think about like all the flights and sure, all the different places I wrote and all the tours we did and actually making the record, I'm like, whoa, I guess like that's a lot of shit in a little bit of time, I guess.
It's a lot of shit in a little bit of time. And it's just funny to me because like, you know, you guys physically hadn't been in the same room. Like you hadn't even met each other again. Do you know what I mean? Like just as dudes. Like, because that's a big part of what has happened, what has transpired, which I don't think gets talked about enough, like in interviews, is like, you guys, you know, the six of you in the band, it's been the same band since 2004?
Yeah. 2003, yeah.
No one in the band is replaceable. Everybody had to be on board for all of these things, whether it was tours, whether it was a record, whether it was, you know, whatever. And that happened. And that must have happened from a personal standpoint.
Yeah, man. I feel like it was one of those things that when people asked, are we going to make a record? Are you guys going to make a record? Are you, like, you're just cashing it in. Get big money for a reunion tour. It's like, that's not, yeah, nothing to do with any of that. Like, we didn't want to put pressure on anyone to make a record yet when we weren't, you know, that it was like such a new relationship again. It's like,
right,
it's like mending a relationship after like cheating or something. Like it's really fragile. I feel like,
yes,
maybe it's not as bad as that, 'cause I feel like you can never trust someone like that again, but you know what I mean? Like comparable to that. Like we were, you know, there was just a lot of stuff that had been worked out. I think most of it was worked out as individuals on our own. Like I had to do a lot of work on myself, and so did Aaron, and so did Tim, and everyone in between. Like went through a lot, you know, from being in the band as teenagers until the breakup, and then, you know, getting back together. You know, the idea was like the idea was to get back together to play shows again because we owe it to everyone, because the farewell tour was so shitty and short.
Yeah.
And, you know, like that record was monumental for our lives and for a lot of people's lives. So that was like the obvious first step to talking and, you know, all that. And it's like, you know, we're a band. We've always been best friends. We went through a couple rough years where we didn't talk, you know, and family always comes back together, in my opinion. And that's exactly what happened with us. And you get a band of dudes together that are writers and players, you know, like, you know how it is. You're holding a guitar. You're not going to not riff. And then the drummer's not going to not start playing something. Like, it happened, you know, right. It was very natural. It's like, we tried, you know, to not write during that first tour. But as soon as the first tour was done, Aaron and myself were like, you know, not like fuck those guys in a way, but kind of like, hey man, I'm not going to wait for everyone to come around, right, like to start working. Like, let's just start working now. So that's what we did. Me and Aaron started writing right after the first tour, just alone, just me and him.
Well, it makes sense though, because, you know, you and Aaron were the only musicians in the band, like, that were doing this the whole time.
Yeah.
Everybody else, you know, had gone and they'd started families or they'd worked other jobs, and, you know, so it makes sense.
Yeah. And I don't think it was like a, let's do this in secret, or right, let's try to make a record without everyone. That wasn't the case at all. We wanted to start working on stuff because that's what we do. And we wanted to play together again. And we're like, you know what? If these guys don't want to do this, fuck it. Let's start a new band.
Right.
And that was kind of the idea. And within the next round of practices, I think getting ready for Europe or something, we were all ready to start. And we wrote in groups. You know, me and Aaron wrote a lot together. I wrote some by myself. Tim and Chris wrote a lot together. And then the four of us wrote some together and then worked on all of it in the studio. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So we went in with like 30 tracks.
Really? 30 tracks? Is that like, and I always ask this question because I remember hearing, you know, when you're like a kid and you're about my age, so I used to read, you know, magazines and whatever it was, whether it was Guitar World or I don't know,
yeah,
whatever, you know, rock magazines there were out there. And I'd always hear bands say, oh yeah, man, we wrote 30 songs or 50 songs or whatever. And you're like, damn, you only recorded, like, there's only 12 on the record and like 9 of them suck. You know what I mean? Like
yeah,
it just in general with bands. So I always ask people, like, when you say 30 songs, is that like 30 songs, like all the lyrics are done, bridges done, like actually put together? Or is that like 30 like ideas?
We, for the most part, dude, a lot of the lyrics and melodies, because this is the first time we had to write in like around lyrics and melodies, because we're just in a different spot now. We're all older and we all want, you know, different things out of music, and we're not trying to, you know, force ourselves into what the box we had created for Under Oath was. So it was great because normally we would write a bunch of music and then we'd go in there and things would change and then we'd just get thrown under the bus. Like, all right, now you got to put lyrics on it and make it work. And that's how Under Oath always worked until this record, where, because we had a jump start and me and Anna were like, you know, this is how we always write unless it's for Under Oath. Like, let's really focus on what we're saying, how we're saying it, how we're singing it, and make songs that fit that and make that presentable in a cool way. And, you know, there's obviously the Under Oath way of writing things, and like some of the Tim songs, and it's like, oh, like, let's get in there and try to make lyrics. You know, he's obviously not thinking of lyrics because he's not a lyric or melody guy. He's a guitar player. But a lot of the songs were written with vocals in mind for the first time ever for Under Oath. So even in the 30-something songs, you know, that we brought in, like, a lot of it would be like, okay, this chorus is awesome and the lyrics are great, the melody's great, the verse is okay and the bridge is shit. So let's write a new bridge or take a bridge from this song that's awesome and make the verses better. And, like, you know, it wasn't like 30 amazing songs. It was like, you know, we wrote some in the studio as well. So there was a lot of great songs that the world could have heard, I feel like, but they weren't going to be Under Oath until the four of us got there. Because it's like the four main people that actually play the instruments on the records, which is me, Aaron, Tim, and Chris, you know. So once the four of us got in a studio setting together, that's when, like, it really came alive. But yeah, a lot of the melodies or lyrics even on some of the songs were some of the stuff from our very early on demos for writing. Like, right, it didn't, for the first time ever, it was like, oh, we'll change the lyrics, change this. Like, no, let's, like, if this song isn't cool enough, like, let's make the music cool around with, like, the vocals were were there.
That's interesting.
This is also the first record that we worked together on. Like, even though we started with the writing like in separate groups, this is the first record that we didn't just fight through and one guy got his way on this song, the other guy got his way on that song. You know, this is a record to where we all six love every single track on the record, and that's never happened for
really?
ever.
It's weird because I know you guys used to have, you know, I remember I watched your DVD with Matt Squire talking about your band and how unique you guys are and how every band member has veto power. So like if anybody isn't happy with something, they can say no and you pull the plug. And that's like Tim talks about it like in you know, depth on the DVD, saying like, oh, you know, it's art, and if the second that someone's not on board, it's you drop it. But I mean, now you're saying maybe that wasn't 100% true.
I think that's how it always was in the past. Like in the past, someone that's never written a single note for Under Oath could walk in the room and go, I don't like it. I'm not going to play it. I don't like it. And that's it. Mm-hmm. No constructive criticism. No, oh, I think the verse could be stronger. Like, I've got this idea. No, it was just like, I don't like it. No, that was how it was, right. You know? And this time around, it was like, if a couple of us were feeling a song or an idea and someone wasn't, you would speak up and work on it. And like, we'd be like, cool. All right, Tim, I don't want to make another song that sounds like another B-side from, you know, Define the Gray Line, but let me get in my hands in there with you. And like, I want to get to a point to where I feel it the way you do. Cause you're one of my best friends and someone I've played music with my whole life. So if you're feeling it, there's obviously something there. So let's work on it and let's get it there.
Right.
And like, and that's not saying my opinion is better than his. That's just saying like, let's all be stoked on it. Cause right now I'm not stoked on it, but instead of me saying no, it was like, okay, cool. Like Chris and Tim, you're really feeling this. Squire, Matt thinks it's a good start. Like, let me make, you know, maybe the vocals will really make me happy. You know, like, let me just start working on it. Or, you know what I mean? Like, sure. I have a different keyboard idea or a different guitar idea. Like, what if you went there instead of there? Like, we actually work together and on all sides. Tim the same way. Tim and Chris on the songs that they would normally never have seen the light of day if it wasn't for us being grown-ups, which is so silly to think now. Like,
right.
Oh, it took you guys like how many records to learn how to work as a group or a team and not be a bunch of babies about everything. Well, but
sorry, go ahead, finish up.
I'm pretty sure that's just the difference between now and then is that I think everyone's confident in who they are. Also we're able to look at things like men and talk things through as a group, as a band, and as friends. And as before, Under Oath records were made by a bunch of babies, in my opinion.
Right.
Like a bunch of kids that wanted to get their way. And it was like,
right.
If you didn't get your way, even if the song made your record, like you saw the guy pouting about it in the corner, like all upset. Like it was always like that. So
yeah, and then how's that happen when someone wants to play that song live? And
yeah,
you just
sucks.
Don't. Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned that you were talking about Tim writing something that sounds like, to quote you from a minute ago, sounds like a Define the Great Line B-side. Now, how difficult is it when you're in a studio writing a record after, what has it been, 8 years or something, making a record, I should say, how hard is it to not compare your new stuff to something from your back catalog and say, oh, this sounds like this, or we shouldn't do this because it sounds like this, or did you have to just try to start with a clean slate?
I think because it had been so long and that none of us listened to anything that sounds remotely like that anymore. And, you know, I just think we trusted each other this time as opposed to being like, oh, we knew firsthand from all the mistakes that we've seen from people around us that like, if you get back together and you go try to recreate your biggest record, 10 years later, I think that's what really does nail you in time is like a nostalgic band. Like you're not going anywhere. You're just going to, you're crowd pleasing at that point, you
right.
know, like, and we could have made a really safe record. We could have made, Define the Great Line part fucking four or whatever the hell, you know, like we could have done that and everyone would have been happy, but we wouldn't have been happy and we wouldn't have been
right.
growing and the band wouldn't have been, it's not about the size of the band. It's about as an artist and then like, just as a player, like growing and evolving, like you know, think about the Beatles, I Want to Hold Your Hand to Sgt. Pepper.
Oh,
like,
sure.
I mean, you know, every band has done it and grows and evolves and experiments, and some things work and some things don't. And, you know, like, I mean, that's part of being an artist.
Yeah.
And I think we don't want to be a business. We don't want to be a band that goes back to what are the fan favorites and try to recreate that. Cause to me, that always sounds fake and phoned in. Like, I've heard so many bands that have gotten back together or whatever. And it's just like, to me, it sounds like a B-side of the record that I fell in love with, as opposed to, hey, man, remember how you made us all feel 10 years ago? Why don't you do that again, but just, like, do it in a new way? Like, try to push the envelope like you did. But it doesn't have to be the same, like, sounding songs. Like, you know, you want someone to, like, make me fall in love with you again. Like make my hair stand up on my arm again. Like, because that's not going to happen by not rustling my feathers and giving me, you know, The Shape of Punk to Come to, or you know what I mean, or Define the Great Line Part 2, or whatever it is, like, whoever you're listening to, like, that doesn't do anything for me. That just sounds like, oh, this sounds like a bunch of songs that they didn't release the first time, because they're just not as good, because you connected the first time, right? And you connected for a reason, because it was honest and it was fresh and it was new,
right?
And I think as a player or as a writer, like, that's something that we strive for, because, you know, if we're not happy, then what's the point? You know, like, why would we have gotten back together? Everyone could have just kept doing what they were doing. Like, if people were surprised with Erase Me was going to sound different, like, I'm like, kind of like, really?
Right, I know.
What have you not paid attention to Under Oath in the past?
Absolutely.
You know, we're always kind of flip the script on ourselves. And
totally. And I have so many questions to ask you about the record and stuff. But before we get there, I have a couple other things I just want to ask, because I got them on my list and I really want to know and I want the people to know. So, when did you guys decide, okay, we're going to be a band again, not just doing these, you know, the rebirth or whatever you guys called it, the doing the two albums? When did you decide we're going to be a band again and we're going to make a record?
When was that decision? I think me and Aaron, within the first practice, were like, dude, I mean, because me and Aaron have been playing music this whole time. Like, God, why aren't we playing together? You know, like, this is retarded. And I think after the first show or a couple shows in on the very first tour, I was like, dude, we've got to make a record. But it wasn't until I think we were in Europe to where the other guys were really on board.
Yeah.
Cause I remember halfway through the Rebirth tour is when we started booking Europe and Australia rebirths and all that stuff. And it was, I remember the conversation, because some of the guys weren't sure if they wanted to leave, like, that cushy job kind of scenario, because it is risky being in a band, and they do have mouths to feed, and, you know, like, I understand that, but I think it was kind of, you know, it was bound to happen. And, you know, I think the only person we were like, we weren't really sure what Chris was gonna do, and or James, and eventually Chris came around, and once Chris came around, that was like, well, you know, James will come around. And I think it was like was in Europe, you know, I think. And Chris came around full force. You know, he's music 24/7 now, which is a beautiful thing to see, because he's creating even outside of Under Oath, as far as, like, working on, like, short film soundtracks and, like, really dove into his instrument.
Good for him. That's awesome.
And yeah, I really see him as, like, a most improved player. You know what I mean? Like, that dude
amazing. And you guys are on Fearless Records now, which is a brand new label for you guys. I'm sure when you announced, hey, we're back together, we're going to make a record, through your management or whoever, however you did it, you must have had a lot of people wanting to put out Erase Me, or the record that became Erase Me, you know, what I should say. But how was that decision? That must have been difficult for you. I mean, you'd always been with Tooth and Nail, which I guess didn't really make sense anymore to be on the label. Walk me through that how you got hooked up with Fearless.
Well, it's Fearless. It's Concord Fearless. It's like the Concord owns Fearless, and, you know, it's like BMG Rise. You know, like, who we talked to as well, BMG, and we talked to Concord, and Concord just, I don't know. It just seemed like, first of all, it might have been me. Oh, I know it was me. I'm just trying not to sound like an asshole, but I said that I'm not going to make a record if it's going to come out on Tooth and Nail. I said that it's not worth my time. I was still writing for Sleepwave and you know, like I was touring and I was like, I just don't think it's, because Tooth and Nail is about half the size as it was when we were active, you know?
That's true.
They've really downsized and they don't have any sort of reach. And it's been the only hindering in our band, like is some of the places that we go to that records, when records actually were sold or whatever, like you couldn't get them there, you know, right, because of Tooth and Nail, because they didn't have that there. So that was like, dude, you know, it's smaller than it was. We owed them one more record. So we spent our own money. Everyone thinks that we're just cash grabbing over here or whatever. Really? We did. We took Rebirth money and we bought ourselves out of our contract.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Because
That's crazy.
We believed so much in this band and our fans and the support we've had that we just feel like it should be heard.
Yeah.
And if it's on Tooth and Nail, it won't be, you know, like, or it won't be as heard as much.
Yeah.
Or we won't have the opportunities to let people hear it. So there was a lot of labels that came to mind.
Yeah, I thought Epitaph might be the label, since you worked, you know, with Sleepwave and everything.
Yeah, well, I just didn't have a great experience. You know, I'm sure they're a great label, but for me personally, it didn't. Right. I didn't have any communication with them, and I don't like that. I like to be hands-on, and I like to feel like someone wants me there, not like, oh, well, we'll put out your record. You know, like, sure. Like, I want someone to be as excited as I am, or there's no point. And right. I think Bob and Ginny at Fearless and the Concord, the radio department at Concord, knowing that by hearing the demos, like, well, we can actually have some radio for the first time. Like, that'll be a tool that will help us, you know?
Sure.
They have Concord as a very impressive radio department. And Ginny and Bob, the main two people at Fearless, they were like as excited as a band member hearing the songs. And I just thought, you know, we all thought that was sick. You know, like, that's the kind of people you want working for you. People that think that it's the best thing they've ever heard. Otherwise, you know, how are you going to get the proper, you know, push when you're not, yeah, you know, that's their job, is to give this to people and to convince people why they want it and why it should be in it, you know, here, not there or whatever. And seeing people that excited about it really was awesome.
Totally, man. Well, talking about the record, when everyone hears this, the record will be out. I have had the chance to listen to it all the way through 3 times.
Sick.
I think the record is amazing. I love it. And what struck me about the record, you know, the first time I listened to it, and I decided, all right, I'm gonna, you know, kind of shut everything out. I'm not gonna like listen to it while I drive or anything. I'm gonna like really listen to this record. And the second that the record was finished, after I heard, well, I heard the bonus tracks too, but the second after I gave up, the last song was over,
right,
I wanted to listen to it again. I needed to listen to it again. And not to say, you know, with your last record, I didn't feel that way, because I think it's a great record, but there's something about this record that has a re-listenable appeal. And I don't know what it is, but I have to ask you if that's something you were conscious of, to try to make the record, maybe not catchy isn't the right word, but there's something about it that makes you want to hear those songs again and again.
I don't think it's a conscious effort. I think that just comes with the fact that we really, really, really wanted to make a record. You know, the last record we made, you know, you know how it is being in a band, like you get on a touring routine and you have to put out a record every 2 years, which means you have to write it this time and take off to do this. And then
Right. You're
in the studio by this time. And it's like, it's not a lot of time to let your mind be creative and have the things that you need to say at the proper time to get them off your chest. Like, a lot of things aren't there yet. And like, just in your brain or whatever. And I think we were just overdue. And I think it's just a very urgent record. When I hear it, it sounds like,
yeah, that's like a good word
it needs to be heard, and like people need to hear it. And I think that's, you know, like you said, you heard, okay, I didn't realize you were going to hear the two bonus songs, but those songs are great too. But the reason, like, I didn't want to put too many songs on the record, because right, I think people get bored, and that's like, even when you're like planning a set list, it's always hard. It's like, how do you keep people from being like, okay, I've had enough Underoath for tonight, you know, like, we'll see him next time and leave early, you know, because it's like, it's a hard thing, like, especially nowadays, like, people's attention spans are like half of what they used to be or something.
Yeah,
like,
I think so.
They say like teenagers now have less attention span than a goldfish or something. Like, I don't know. I read that fact somewhere. I don't know if it's true, but you know, it's like, But it's because we're so stimulated all the time. Music is everywhere. There's a new song every single day for someone to hear, and it's streaming on every streamable free thing or by a monthly subscription, and videos are everywhere. And, you know, like just the access like to everything, access in excess. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's just, it's like a 24-hour Walmart for everything in the entertainment world, you know? And
such a great analogy, dude.
You know,
it's so bad, but so good.
But I'm not shit talking. I'm just like, it's just where the world is at right now.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we picked the song. We had so many other songs. Like the record could have gone so many different directions, but it's like, I read an interview with Trent Reznor one time when he's like talking about when he starts writing a record, he knows within the first couple of songs whether it's going to be an electronic record or a rock record.
Wow.
And I thought that was really interesting. And I think I kind of saw myself in that scenario at this time where we were, you know, well, these are really strong. So, like, we've got to make songs that feel like they've picked the right songs, the best songs that make this feel like an album, not just like, oh, I want to stream the single and then listen to the, I don't know. I know it's a dead format, the album, like my manager tells me, and everyone thinks that, you know, people don't listen to albums, but I still want to make them that way.
Yeah, no, fuck that. I don't agree at all. I don't think it's a dead format at all. I don't care about the mainstream single, radio, pop. Like, anybody that's into rock music wants to listen to an album. I mean, that's I believe that. I don't believe it's a dead format.
I sure hope so, because that's that's what I want. I want to like go on the journey. That's another thing. Another reason why I hate singles. Like, a lot of kids lost their mind when they heard Rapture. And I'm like, yeah, but you got to think, what would Under Oath done to have set you up for that? And where will their album go? And obviously, I don't care if you're mad because I love the song and it has its right place for the record. But like, and we're never going to make people happy. That's just how it is with music. But like, I just thought about that. I was like, I don't like putting out the first song ever because I like for people to hear the first song and it just like, whoa, you know, like, it's like now that you've heard the record, like it kind of makes a lot more sense.
Totally. Oh, it totally does. It totally does. And you know, it's funny you brought up Trent Reznor, Nine Inch Nails a minute ago, because when I heard, the first track released on my teeth, you know, before I'd heard the whole record, I thought to myself, damn, this is like a Nine Inch Nails vibe kind of, you know, going on. And there's there's a few nods to Nine Inch Nails on the record, which is very cool. But yeah, you know, it's so far, you know, until this comes out, 'cause I'm going to put this out on the release date, but so far, the only thing the fans have heard are the two tracks On My Teeth and Rapture, which are like track 2 and 3, I think.
Track 2 and 3. Yeah.
And I was actually, I don't know, listening to the whole record, I'm surprised those were the songs you chose to lead with. What was the decision there? Or I guess there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's more of a label call, you know, like Rapture's the first song they thought would, you know, that's the radio single, you know, which is being picked up before they even ad date, you know, was being picked up before we even started servicing it, which is great for us because we've never had any ads from radio before. First for Under Oath. And, you know, we didn't write songs for that reason at all. Like, we wrote a record that we wanted to hear. Like, I wanted to make songs that when I push play, it's like, fuck yeah. That's what I would drive in my car. Let's do, this is what I want to hear. You know, and that's what we all did. You know, that was a conscious decision we made. As far as the single choices, you know, the label wanted to go start service with a heavy song first because it's going to be your core fans listening for the first track. You know, you're not gaining new fans when you release a song, and then they wanted to go with the first song they were going to go to radio with. But there's so many. I mean, it's the first record I've loved every song on. So they could have gone with any song, and I would have been happy.
That's awesome. That's awesome. No, it's tough. And, you know, a lot of people pointed out that you dropped an F-bomb in the first song you released. I'm Not Your Fucking Prey. Were you surprised at the reaction? People were very upset. A lot of your core fan base was upset. Is that the first time you've dropped an F-bomb in an Under Oath song, is it not?
In an Under Oath song.
Yeah.
But like, as far as an interview in real life Sleepwave songs.
I mean, look at Aaron. The guy swears like a sailor.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it's. I think the day that came out, like 2 days before, there was this massive school shooting in Miami or somewhere close to Miami. And I was like, and this is what you guys want to argue about? Because I said fuck, and it's like it's so petty. It's such a petty thing, and You know, I really didn't care. I was like, the kind of people that would get mad about that are going to hate us for the whole record anyway. They're going to hate the change. They're going to hate anything about, like, you know, my dad was telling me about this because he does a lot of work seminars and talks to a lot of businesses that 70% of Americans fear change. And that's right. Like a huge, or maybe it was more, 80% or something like that. And, you know, but once you after you get over the shock, you normally love change. It's just the initial shock. Yeah. And I think that this is an honest under oath. And I think under oath trying to fit in a box of what Christianity was when some of us were not believing in those or feeling that way anymore. Right. It's like forcing someone to love you. Like if your girlfriend's like, I don't love you anymore. Like, no, you have to love me.
Right.
You have to love me. Or I'm going to kill myself. But like, that's basically what you're saying because yeah. You know what I mean? That's basically what you're saying because you're like, oh, if you're not Christian, the band has to be over. Like that's such a ridiculous box to put on somebody and such a hard, you're in a band that people should be individuals. You should be a band, but you're all your own person and you should have freedom of speech and freedom of sexuality and religion or whatever you want. Like you should be able to be you because that's what being alive is about, man. Like that's what being a human is and accepting that with your friends, like no matter who they are. Like, and I just think people that are going to be mad about me saying fuck are the kind of people that we're just like, those aren't the people that aren't going to show up to our shows anyway. And we, you know, like I'm not trying to be an asshole, but I don't really care if you're mad because I don't care.
Yeah, well, I think part of the reason the reaction was because you guys were a legit Christian band. It wasn't some kind of loose, like, oh, well, we'll say we believe in God, and then maybe more people in the South will buy records, you know, so we'll kind of say we are. Like, you know that happens all the time, and then behind the scenes, no one's talking about it, no one cares. But you guys, you know, actually had Bible studies, and you didn't drink, and you'd hang out with girls, and you, like, guys literally didn't swear.
We all drank, for sure.
Well, you did, okay. Maybe it was a little bit behind closed doors, because I remember that the tour we did, you know, back in, like, when we did Warped Tour in 2004, and when we did, you know, the, I lost my headphones, and when we did the European tour for the first time, you guys definitely were, I didn't see much drinking, and I definitely didn't hear you guys swear at all. So
wasn't much drinking in 2004. Right. I mean, I think we were all 20 or 21.
I know. But I'm just saying, so, like, if maybe that's part of it, because fans did look up to you guys in that way because you did practice what you preached. Do you know what I mean? Which in rock music doesn't always happen. So, you know, I think it's, and I don't get me wrong, like, I think it's great that you guys were, you know, honest with yourselves back then with who you are, and that you're honest with yourselves about who you are now.
Yeah, I think it just became super unhealthy. I think that when you're a kid and you're, you know, like, a lot of those guys grew up that way, very, like, you know, going to Christian rock shows and, you know, like, that was something that was kind of new to you. And, you know, I drank in high school and smoked pot, and then I, like, became a Christian and stopped doing those things. And then, obviously, shortly after was pretty much a drug addict for the next 12 years of my life. But I think that, you know, I think that at first it was nice, and like we had a thing going on, but as time went on, like, definitely everyone was changing and it was a lot of pressure, and it definitely killed the band. I think just the not letting people breathe and live and constantly ridiculing each other for doing the wrong things, I don't think anyone would last as long as we did. And I think in 2009 is when we said we were no longer a Christian band anymore,
right?
For the first time. And whether people were listening or not, it's not really my fault. But I don't think there's no ill will towards it. We don't hate Christians. We're not anti things we said. We didn't write any songs about, you know, to me, a Christian band would be a band who's singing about God, which we never did, except for Some Seek Forgiveness. And that song was written by Aaron Marsh from Copeland. You know what I mean? And and, you know, and that's just not, to me, like, I think putting any sort of category on music makes it no longer universal. And I think that's really sad. Like, so a lot of bands I related to that if you would have told me so-and-so was a Christian band when I was a kid, I wouldn't have listened, you know? And that's really, that's sad. You know, I think we weren't singing praise and worship songs, and some of the guys in the band weren't feeling that way anymore. And you know, I think it's not like losing faith. It's maybe more about gaining knowledge. And as people have gotten smarter and learned more about life and experience life, they're just like, you know, I don't think I, you know, fit into what you would consider a Christian, so I don't consider myself a Christian anymore. You know, I think the idea of who Jesus was is the most beautiful thing, but the idea of the religion of constantly being judged and human beings telling other human beings how to live and all those rules that come with it is not a good life, at least for me to live. You know, like I didn't feel the community of that or the love or any sort of camaraderie with it. I just felt alienated and ridiculed a lot and definitely put down for having addiction problems or depression problems. Like there was no help there. It was all you know, you don't talk about this thing because you're a Christian. You know what right. I mean? Like that to me is super unhealthy. And I'm not saying that's how it is. I'm just saying that's how it was for me. So it was easy for me to be like, you know, this isn't for me. Am I in a bad place? Am I lost? No, I'm like, for the first time in my life, I'm happy. I'm healthy. I've been off drugs for over like a year and a half. You know, like I'm like,
good for you.
You know, it's like the best things in my life have come with just like loving people and loving myself and just living my best life and trying to better myself every day. And I think Underoath is kind of all there. I don't think any, I don't know if anyone in the band considers themselves a Christian, quote unquote, in that light. I don't think
really?
That anyone's.
Okay. That's because that's, I have that as a question here, you know, because I don't know. I, you know, all of you guys in the band are different people and you have different thoughts and different opinions, and that's fine. So I kind of wondered if, you know, in talking about the 100% veto thing that Underoath has, if anyone was like, hey, and the news just in, like, this is not the only F-bomb on the record. There's more, even more prominent ones, which I want to ask you about because I want to talk about a couple specific songs in a second. But I just kind of wondered if anyone was like, hey, Spencer, hey, Aaron, maybe we shouldn't drop like 4 F-bombs on this record. Like, maybe that's going to kind of freak people out.
No, I mean, honestly, like, I'll write things the way I would say them. Like, I would never cuss just for the sake of it, to piss people off or to be like, we're not a Christian band anymore. Like,
right.
No, I just feel like when it sounds urgent, like, I don't like bands that cuss all the time, but when it's urgent, like, it sounds right, you know, like...
Oh yeah,
I don't
absolutely.
Know. You know, like sometimes speaking of Trent Reznor when he says it, or Tom York, or like like Daryl from Glassjaw, like when it comes out in that like urgent, like man, like it's like I'm not your fucking prey. Like that's what you would say to someone. Like you wouldn't say I'm not your prey. You know what I mean? Like it just doesn't come out of my mouth that way, or most people's that way. And I think. And, you know, and I would look, and then when I would record, I'd be like, "Hey, Chris, do you have a problem with like, is this?" And like, I was like, "Hell no!" I was like, "That sounds right to me." You know, like I wasn't just sneaking it behind people's backs just to rustle feathers. It was just like, I think it was like a thing where it's like, "Hey, if anyone has a problem with it, then just speak up." You know, that's kind of how the new Underoath is, and I feel like. Anytime it's said, it's just needed, you know, and I don't think it's not really a huge thought of mine. It's not like should I drop a dirty word or not? You know, to me, it's just like I'm writing, you know, lyrics to a real case scenario song, something I lived through, and I need to get this off my chest.
Oh, totally.
This is therapeutic for me. This is something I need to say.
Absolutely. And I get that.
And then when you track it and you hear it back and you're like, hell yeah, man, that's the take. And then, oh, wait, but there's a dirty word in there. Should I like redo that and make it like not as impactful? That's where I feel like, no, I'm not going to make the song suffer. And if everyone agrees that this is the take, let's leave it in there.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we did. You know, I don't think it was a conscious decision. It wasn't like, you know, let's
absolutely.
Drop a fuck word in this song.
Absolutely, man. Well, you know, it's funny. I have another note here too that I was when I was listening to the record, and I didn't know that you had such a drug problem. Like I know it's been talked about, and I know, you know, but geez, 12 years of, you know, of being an addict. That's That's crazy. So congratulations on being clean. But I wrote this note here. And it's kind of weird. I wrote, it seems like the whole record is about addiction. And also, it's about how Christianity in some ways pushed you towards that. That was the note I just made for myself. Is that accurate?
I feel like it's not like... I don't think you can blame... I think you're responsible for all your actions. I don't think anyone can really push you like to do something or to not do something. I think it's the same way as... I had this conversation on a radio interview the other day where we were talking about how do you get kids to not, you know, get involved in drugs and this and that and the other. And I said, well, you can't, man. I think the more you tell someone to not do something, the more they're going to want to do it. And I think it's not about telling someone not to do something. It's about giving someone the tools to use when they're there, like when they realize they're in a spot. And that's something we're not doing as a human race. I feel like it's not okay to talk about it. It's looked at as weak if you say, hey, I've got a problem or I need help. Like those are all things that are frowned upon, and I'm not sure why, which is why people in our industry keep dying. I think it's just right. Like no one wants to talk about it, brush it under the rug. Like, you know, I wasn't even sure if I was, you know, there was years where I used a lot of drugs. There was years that I didn't use as much, but it was never like, I never was really went longer than a week without using drugs. And there was times where it was every single day. There was times where it was all day. And there was years where it was like, oh, you know, once a week or twice a month or something like that. Like,
yeah.
And I got to the point in my life where I was like, well, shit, like, am I? And I guess, is this what an addict is? Feeling like it's okay.
Right.
Just use, you know, And I think that's where I kind of hit the wall with it, you know?
Wow. Wow, man. Well, I'm just glad to hear that you're back. We have Spencer. Great new record, Erase Me, which is out now. It's out today if you're listening to this. So I want to talk about some of these songs. And I have notes on so many songs, and I don't know where to... I'm just going to start with this one, because this was a real standout track to me. The song, I guess it's the beginning of track two. The beginning of side two. I Hate It. Now this song is a banger, and you were mentioning radio play earlier and going for that. I could definitely see this song being played on the radio.
Yeah, I don't think that's something we ever were conscious about in writing. It's just kind of naturally what we write. You know, going back to the things we grew up on and the things that we love. Like that song was actually a demo, pretty much the same as the demo that me and Aaron wrote. I think it was the fifth song we wrote for this whole process.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the song that started with a lyric and started with an idea. And I think we wrote it at like 3 a.m, me and Aaron in Salt Lake City. Like we had been working on some other songs. We went and got late night food because we were in his little studio all day. And then we had a few drinks and we're talking about just like having a conversation about that. Like, you're the only thing that gets me high and I hate it. And we're like, dude, that's it. Like, let's go make this song. And it was like really slow, same chord progression, but different instrumentation a little bit. And it was very much like a Soundgarden song. I was like, think Black Hole Sun, man. Let's think Black Hole Sun. And I'm on the guitar and he's on the drums and we're just working it out. And we recorded it and loved it. And everyone in the band hated it. Until we got to the studio and we, you know, we spiced it up and we let Tim and Chris get on there and we sped it up and it became what you hear now, but not a whole lot changed. And everyone loved it. You know, like it's what a simple like guitar effect or lead and some, you know, a tempo change can do for a song.
Also dropping an F-bomb in there. If I could turn back time, I wouldn't change a fucking thing. And that line has some weight, man.
Yeah.
You know, it goes back to what you were saying about, well, if the F-bomb wasn't in there, and you're right. You're right. It really is impactful.
Yeah, it definitely changes the, I just think that's how I said it, you know, and we could have re-recorded it three different ways to not make someone mad, but I don't think that's the point, you know?
No, totally. And I noticed that you sing a lot on this record. Aaron, I mean, on I Hate It, it sounds like it's Aaron for the most part singing on that song, but how hard was it to decide, especially with you guys writing together, who was going to sing lead vocals on what part, with, you know, you growing so much as a clean vocalist in the band, you know, and obviously Aaron being Aaron?
I just think, like, and I hate it. He doesn't sing at all except for the pre-chorus. Yeah.
I can't tell the difference between you guys anymore. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't sing at all except for that. He sings the pre-chorus.
Okay.
Yeah. Most of the record, you know, it's like I'm the singer of the band and Aaron does vocals as well, but you know, he's playing drums and like, there's been a lot of times where we've done things on records to where he's like, well, I can't do it live. So you have to do it. So what's the point in that? You know, like Aaron sings when it's necessary, like as a breath of air, you know, like it to change it up a little bit. But like most songs, Aaron will, you know, sing on the bridge or sing the pre-chorus or something. But yeah, he doesn't sing as much as he used to. And I don't think he didn't want to, you know, I just think that he's in a different spot than he was, you know. He used to be someone that was maybe more trying to seek attention, and now he's someone who's very confident in himself and loves playing drums, and he's like, I'm not going to sing unless it's like, it would be better if there's two people singing here, like where we go back and forth sometimes. Wow. It's like, but yeah, I think that was just pretty, you know, pretty standard.
Absolutely.
Like just a band being a band, you know, why not?
And another track that stood out to me was Bloodlust, which seemed like kind of more like a classic Oath song. What's the story behind that one?
That song, I mean, that was one of the ones that Tim had worked on at first that we didn't really, me and Aaron weren't feeling until we got our hands in there and it turned into the song that you hear now. That one is, I don't know, it ended up becoming, it started off as one of my least favorites and ended up becoming one of my favorites over time. And I think that just came with us just getting in there and communicating. Because I think it started off with just that like Radiohead sounding thing and it just went forever and it didn't really go anywhere. And then we got some guitars in there, boom, it became like a loud Under Oath song, right. You know? And absolutely. I think that's, yeah, that was one that really came together in the studio because the demo was nothing really.
And for you, what are some of your favorites? Because those were kind of the ones that stood out for me as definitely songs that I like. I really like the lead track too. Or sorry, the first song. I mean, It Has to Start Somewhere. I thought maybe that would be one you'd put out first to kind of kick off the record. But for you, what kind of stands out?
I mean, they all do it in different ways. Like, I think we picked those songs because they were the most standout ones we had, and I love them all. You know, like, there's not a song I'm like, oh, this is my favorite song, and then tomorrow the other one's my favorite. Yeah. You know, it's like, I really love, I love the opening track. I really love Wake Me. I think I love I Give Up. I love.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Sync With You. I love them. I mean, I love them all. Like, I Hate It. That's a huge one for me. That I was a big advocate for that song being on the record.
I Hate It is my jam for sure. Sync With You is cool. I really like the surprise ending that you guys used, you know, at that kind of end of the side with side one. It comes back, and I'm like, oh, my God. It was, like, so sick. So that's a really, really cool idea, man. No, for people listening, if you haven't checked out the new Under Oath record, it is amazing. I really like it. I think it's an amazing way to come back. And you know, you referenced The Shape of Punk to Come, and you know, we had a conversation just among some of the Silverstein guys and some of our friends, not to drop any names, but we were hanging out with like Spitalfield and we were hanging out with Real Friends and a bunch of Chicago people, and we had a conversation about if any bands have come back, you know, from a long hiatus, whether it's like Refused or At the Gates or whatever, and has made a record that was like mind blowing. And I don't know if anybody has, but to me, you guys have done it. So that
means a lot.
I'm on board
that.
And it's really great to talk to you, man. And before I let you go, is there any significance with the title of the record, Erase Me? What's that mean?
That's just a lyric from I Hate It, actually. I just think we're just kind of listening to it back and we're picking out different phrases that we thought made a great record, because it could be taken so many ways, and like, you know, so much about us has changed, and so much of us want a clean slate, and a lot of the record is about leaving that part of you behind, and it just seemed to kind of fit everything, and it seemed like a great title. I don't know.
It is a great title. It's a little bit of a throwback to a little bit of a shout out to Nine Inch Nails there too.
Oh yeah, I guess so.
Right? Don't they say in that Eraser song? It's erase me, kill me, kill me. Yeah.
Yeah.
But dude, thank you so much. I guess tell the people what's going on next. You guys have tour dates coming up. What's the plan for the rest of the year?
We're going to be touring pretty much nonstop. So, you can expect more than one tour from us this year. So, awesome. Our plan is to tour and go everywhere on this record more than once, hopefully, and try to see everybody, and then keep this thing going. We're just going to keep on going as Under Oath, hopefully for another decade or more. You never know.
Yeah, I love that, man. I love that. Well, Spencer, thanks for taking the time, and enjoy the rest of your day at the pool.
Absolutely, man. Thank you, dude.
Yeah, man, all the best. Take care. So there it is with Spencer. We got into some deep stuff there. It was great. It was great. I hope the nerds, the Under Oath nerds, are happy. The casual fans happy as well. And I know some of you have not heard Erase Me yet. Go listen to the record. Do what I did, really take it all in. And I don't know what happened when I listened to that record, but I finished it and I was like, I got to hear this thing again. Because this record is really, really dynamic. It's got a lot of layers to it, and you're going to miss a lot the first time. So hit me up. Let me know what you think of the record as well. I love this discussion. Of course, we're on all the social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Facebook's a great place to discuss this. We got a revamped Facebook page, so check that out. And of course, you can email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read all my emails, so get in touch. Tell me your favorite track. Or if you have suggestions for other guests of the show or anything to do with the podcast, that is all good as well. I want to thank Spencer for taking time out of his pool day. I want to thank their manager, Randy, for setting this up. And I want to thank you for the love, for the support. Please keep spreading the word of mouth. Tell a friend, tell a loved one. It really does go a long way in helping this thing keep growing. I'm going to leave you with a track, and no surprise what my pick is. A song we talked about a lot on this podcast. Here is a brand new Under Oath track, I Hate It, on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love, and we'll see you next week. I used you up to my